Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
Hey, thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. This is Katie, HRN Executive Director, and I'm so excited to share with you our coverage from the Charleston Wine and Food Festival.
We are here live today at Charleston Wine and Food.
Join us as we talk all things food.
Come to Charleston, eat some seafood. Eat all of the seafood.
Chicken fried chicken with chorizo steak and salsa verde mashed potatoes.
So quintessentially like Southern fare at its finest.
And have important conversations.
We're also talking about professional women in restaurants and how underrepresented they are. People of color in restaurants and how they're not talked about.
We get real with Food Network's Manit Chauhan.
Balance is BS. I was told that I wasn't going to be bleeped out.
And find out about raising sugarcane with Chef Sean Brock.
It's like being Indiana Jones or something. You never know what you're going to find.
You'll come away inspired by the power of food and the food scene in Charleston. Here's Dr. Jessica B. Harris.
Food is constantly in flux. Food is always moving. Food is the only real lingua franca that we have that allows us to connect with other folks.
So tune in to Heritage Radio Network on tour at heritageradionetwork.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't go wrong.
Welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, a food writer and director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from our studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, so I'll try to demystify it in this program with my cool guest. And my guest today is Machiko Chiba, who is a best-selling cookbook author and television personality and entrepreneur from Japan. Also in the studio is Machiko's daughter, Akiko Chiba, to help Machiko. And by the way, Akiko is a very successful pianist based in New York City. And Machiko has taught at prominent culinary schools, including Le Cordon Bleu in Paris and London. And in Machiko's English cookbooks, alongside many, many Japanese cookbooks, include Japanese Dishes for Wine Lovers, The Cooks and Cookbook, Microwave Cooking the Japanese Way, Simple, Healthy, and Delicious. And the latest one, which just came out in January, is called The Cooks and Wagashi Cookbook, Traditional Japanese Sweets Made Simply in the Microwave. And wagashi, or traditional Japanese sweets, are not very well known outside of Japan, but each piece is an art because of its aesthetics and the delicate culinary technique behind it. So today we'll discover what wagashi is, how to make wagashi at home, and Machiko's interesting path to become a famous culinary expert, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Also, if you have any ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. You can email us at japaneats@heritageradionetwork.org or akikatayama.com. Now let's start our conversation with Machiko Chiba. Hello, Machiko-san and Akiko-san. Welcome to Japan Eats.
Hi.
So first of all, where did you grow up and how did you get into cooking? And I heard that when you got married, you went to learn cooking from famous Kyoto kaiseki chefs. What a lucky husband.
Yeah, I grew up in Hokkaido and I started to get into cooking when I
participated in several competitions,
mm.
and I got the first prize, several first prizes. So, and luckily, I received several first prizes, which led me to be showcased in television show, as well as in magazine, as a culinary artist.
Mm, that's amazing. So you got married and studied cooking.
Yeah.
And I also heard that you studied Japanese, Chinese, French, and Italian cuisines at professional culinary schools at each country. So you got married and you went to learn Japanese cooking in Kyoto restaurant first? Is that what happened?
Yeah. In cooking, I was always curious of everything. So it was natural for me and to try and learn as much as possible. And regardless of which country the food came from, I also have a very understanding family. We always support one another with whatever it is that we are working on.
Right. So, but then you moved around the world with your husband? Is that how you lived in? Yeah, you can jump in.
No, my dad stayed at home.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh wow, cool. To, really? Wow. So you are the bread maker. Wow.
Yeah, my husband is very busy, so he's a doctor.
Mm. Yes, and he has patients to look after.
Oh, right. So you studied abroad. Studied cooking in each country while your husband, the doctor husband, is working. In Japan. Wow. What an advanced family concept.
He take care of the cat, so.
Okay. That's important. Right. Okay. So another thing I was very impressed with, about what you did, you developed Cookzen, which is a pot specifically made for microwave, and it was sold to over 500,000 people worldwide. So you're such an entrepreneur. So how did you come up with the idea of developing a microwave-friendly pot?
I came up with the idea of developing a good cookware for microwave, and because there were nothing made for it. Back then, the microwave oven seemed to be a tool which only warmed food and drinks. So I decided to make a good product, like a Cookzen, and which I named the Cookzen Cookpot. It is a pressure cooker in the microwave, which cooks food very quickly while maintaining most vitamins and nutrition. You can cook things like a spare rib in 10 minutes and steamed rice in 30 minutes and baked apple in 3 minutes.
Wow.
And the stew and the curry, I love curry very much. And the curry within 10 minutes, so we can cook.
Right, the curry means the Japanese thick curry.
Indian
curry. Oh, really?
Mm.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's, I heard that it's a big hit item in India too, because you can cook curry.
Yeah, she went to India for two weeks to study different spice.
Oh, wow. Wow, so in addition to French, Italian, Japanese, and she can also
went to
cook
India
too.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I visited India to study of curry cooking. So,
Wow. Yeah. So I'm sure there are thousands of spices to learn from. So it's amazing. Okay. And what is your philosophy of cooking? Because I think using microwave oven is pretty approachable and not so challenging. And you went to top culinary schools, but you decided to make it available to regular consumers. Is that what you want to do?
My wish?
Yeah, your philosophy of cooking.
Yeah. My wish is to make people happy and healthy with my cooking. If I can help to show healthy way to cook, simply difficult recipes, and promote wellness in general, then I'm doing the right things. Microwave cooking is helpful for that. because it is very helpful.
Mm.
It is now proven to be one of the healthiest way to cook.
Mm.
Because of its fast cooking time, one can retain most vitamins and nutrition and minerals from food naturally. One example, we don't use water to cook vegetable in the kitchen. Vegetable already had their one water content. So we let them cook from within. So once you cook them in the kitchen, and in the microwave, the vegetable come out sweet, fragrant, vibrant, and the texture that perfect.
Mm.
Yeah.
I heard that your husband was assigned to, like, your husband worked as a doctor in America first, and you learned the microwave, right? That's how you got inspired?
No, I didn't do the microwave. Mm. So, and when I came to United States in Pittsburgh, so many people using the microwave, I was wondered because I dislike microwave very much.
Wow.
And that time, so there are many microwave cooking school.
Mm.
I visited a cooking school.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was so surprised. But it was an American, American cooking.
Mm.
And I thought, I want to change and Japanese cooking is something different. So when I back to Japan, I study and study microwave cooking.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. So I have to read you more about your other books too. I read your wagashi book, but it's amazing. Okay. So let's talk about wagashi. So wagashi is not very well known outside Japan. So maybe you could tell us what wagashi is and what kind of wagashi, a classic and popular for listeners who have no idea about the wagashi.
We have many classic and popular type of wagashi. There would be something you can either find in store. There would be something like daifuku.
Mm-hmm.
Daifuku mochi.
Right.
Yeah. Soft rice quick cake with sweet red bean paste inside.
Mm.
Did you?
For American consumers, the mochi ice, that's similar to, I think, daifuku, right? Mm-hmm. What do you think, Akiko?
Well, the shell, the dough is the same, I think, as the daifuku. And
then it was the kind of frozen version that's a mochi ice cream, right?
Yeah, it's the most well-known dessert, probably.
Right.
Yeah. But I think wagashi is... you have to correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the Japanese little desserts that are often served at the Japanese tea ceremonies in Japan. So it is very, very naturally sweet. I mean, there's no butter or oil or any funny things added. But because the Japanese matcha tea is very bitter, it complements by having that small sweets that often melt in your mouth.
Right.
And it's very seasonal too. Sometimes in the cherry blossom season, you'll see the cherry blossom flower wagashi. In summer, it will be different flowers or mountain motifs.
Right. And also, like showing ice or waterfall, they have more translucent, like jelly looking items. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. So, origin of wagashi is the tea ceremony, right? So that I think, you can have the contrast of the flavors, like bitter and sweet, like you said, also, because of, the caffeine, strong caffeine in tea, you need some cushion in your stomach.
Oh,
and the beautiful wagashi helps too. That's what I heard too.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
we have some dorayaki. Do you know dorayaki and yokai is very popular?
Let's talk about it. Dorayaki. Yeah, I think, there are two types of like really beautiful, like gem look wagashi, like art. Piece of art.
Kingyoku, maybe.
But
There's a lot of comfort food type, which is daifuku or dorayaki. So dorayaki, what is dorayaki?
Like a pancake sandwich with a sweet bean paste. Like pancake.
Right. Yeah. And you know, it's like if you go to Japan, it's sold even in the supermarket. Mm. And that's how wagashi is common in Japan too. Mm-hmm. Like the supermarket shelves, you have dorayaki and daifuku all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, ryokan is very, very popular in Japan.
Mm.
And a sweet red bean, aga, we use aga jelly.
Mm.
And yeah.
Right. And it's kind of a jello texture in a way. But it's sweet, there's no cream in it, and then it's like very satisfying.
Yeah, it's very light.
Right.
Yeah.
So, the other thing is, think wagashi is plant-based, so people think it's healthier.
Yeah. I mean, the agar, my mother was saying ryokan is made out of agar, and that is a very good alternative to gelatin, which is an animal product.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the ingredients, because I think that really shows what the wagashi is. So agar, I think we call it kanten.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what is agar? I mean, kanten or agar?
Yeah, it's very helpful alternative for gelatin. We melt and set it for jelly type of wagashi. Agar is delivered from plant in the sea. Yeah, it is full of fiber.
Right.
Yeah, has no calorie.
Yeah.
And it's a vegan.
Yeah, I heard it's like 80% fiber or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Extremely fibery. Yeah.
So it's all very good for you.
Right.
So
it's number one in fiber.
Oh, yeah.
And the second is kikulage.
Oh, we have a lot of fiber in Japan. Right. Yeah, and I think agar, there's no taste. No odor, and so it's really neutral instead of animal-based gelatin.
Yeah,
right.
But a lot of the vegetarians and vegans can have the agar.
Right.
In
the chef in Paris, when we visit to Paris, so many chefs just start to use the agar.
Instead of gelatin.
And agar comes in a sponge. Like dry sponge form or powder sometimes, or it's very stringy. But whichever way you purchase, you have to melt them in water and heat it.
Right. But I also heard that it sets more firmly than gelatin, and it's able to set a room temperature as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more easier to use for chefs or even home cooks.
Yes.
Right. Okay, and it's in other words, it's kind of like diet food. Right. So other things, what about wasanbon?
Yeah, wasanbon, a very fine Japanese powder sugar, just very, very fine. And that has a distinctive flavor as well as the natural light bean color.
Beige color.
Beige color.
And isn't it very expensive? Because it has to be processed by hand. And wasanbon, when it comes to wagashi, because of that, the refined texture, people pay for it. But wasanbon is very precious. Yeah, and expensive, I heard.
I bet I'm expensive.
Right. Right. And okay, and the other thing, there's so many different powders, right? So what about the kanbaiko, for instance? Kanbaiko, I think it's a sweet rice powder.
That's rice powder. So often use ohigashi. Ohigashi,
like
and very, very soft.
Right.
And
higashi is another type of Japanese sweets. It's a dried snack.
Dried, yeah.
Right, and a little sugar. So it's based on rice powder.
Yeah.
Right, and I think that the other one is kuzu powder.
Very traditional ingredient to wagashi. It is a starch from the arrowroot plant.
Right. I heard in this country, arrowroot became kind of weed. That's really, you know, damaged the ecology of this country. But you can, if you process it right, the kuzu is a very high quality starch.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't know. Somebody told me that kuzu is a really a dominant weed. So once you
it's
have
a
kuzu,
weed?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So, but if you find the kuzu in this country, arrowroot, then you can just make kuzu powder.
Yeah, but it's very very difficult to make because for each plant you can only get such little amount of starch. I think so. Right. It's very precious. That's another
expensive item.
Probably. Right. I mean, to get 100% kuzu powder is difficult, even in Japan, I think.
Right. Okay. And yeah, so there's so many items used to kuzu. You can use a starch, but it's more kind of better texture than other starch. Right. And so you mentioned the dorayaki, but the filling is anko. Right, so what is anko?
Yeah, it's sweetened and white bean with it as a paste often.
Right, so it's a red bean paste. Azuki bean.
Or white. We have it in white also.
Right, so azuki beans have...
Red and white.
Red and white version. And I heard also shiro, that's, you know, regular anko is red, but then white version we call this shiroan. And it can be made sometimes from navy beans or French beans too. So so it's kind of approachable. I think azuki can be grown here in this country as well. So it's not a really foreign item. If you want to make it, you can make azuki anko. So that's something you should think about. Okay. And the people say wagashi is healthier, and we discussed a little bit. Do you think it's healthier than Western sweets?
It is true. And wagashi is healthier than Western dessert in many ways. The rice flour and root powder that we use in Japanese dessert are lower in calorie.
Because of we don't use butter or cream.
No cream. So, and our traditional and the sugar minimally
processed.
Yeah. So they remain naturally sweet even if you use a little of it. Very traditional wagashi doesn't require the use butter or oil. Agar-jori, a plant based. So it is a vegan and low in calorie, unlike the gelatin with is made from bone marrow of animals. So.
And I think because wagashi is, it's not like a giant layer cake, layer, like, you know, the sponge cake or something. It tends to be smaller. And it's pretty sweet, but intense, that you don't feel like eating many of those. And it's beautiful, seasonal, and it's kind of occasion-based, like tea ceremony, or you can just snack. And with a cup of green tea. So I think you tend not to overeat wagashi.
But if you get something a little bit bigger like dorayaki, which is the pancake with the red bean inside, they're made so that it's not so sweet too.
Right.
Because my mother used to make dorayaki for me when I was little.
Oh, yeah.
And I would just eat one of them. She used to make all the desserts and everything for us when we were little.
Wow, I didn't even think of making dorayaki at home. My mother never did.
She used to make pancake on a teppan.
Oh, wow. So, but it's kind of like breaking this argument. Wagashi is healthier because when I eat dorayaki, I like putting some butter on it.
Because it's like pancake.
Yeah, and I think the sweetness and that cream, like fat, goes well. And it's so that satisfying.
It's very good.
And sometimes it's like some piece of cheese with it.
Oh.
Yeah.
So. Cheese dorayaki.
Yep. Yeah, that's like I crave some fat.
Guilty pleasures.
Exactly. So that's a new variation of it.
Oh, yeah. I'll try another.
Yeah. And last week we had John McCarthy of Oka Restaurant, and he just went to Japan to study wagashi.
Mm.
And he said he saw daifuku, and it's the mochi part had some marshmallow in it, mixed in. So there may be some Western influenced versions of wagashi nowadays, but it was very interesting. Yeah. Anyways, so. So you, although you can cook almost any kind of food, you are into wagashi. Why do you think wagashi is interesting to you? Yeah, so, you know, you could choose. You published a book of wagashi, right?
Yeah.
And but why wagashi for you?
It was believed that making the wagashi was difficult at home. And I like challenging. And I also like to do things that no one else had done before.
True.
And that is why I thought I can create wagashi recipes that are easy for everyone to make, and hoped that it would help our traditional become more approachable. I already invented the kukuzen, and with the pot, you can make chocolate of and a natural custard dessert within minutes. Wagashi was only a next step away in my mind.
Right. So, I mean, still, I'm not sure if our listeners can really visualize, you know, what wagashi is. But basically, it's really beautiful, seasonal, and healthy, and you can make any kind of thing pretty easily if you know how to do it. Although I have not tried, almost never. But I saw your book, and then I can do it probably at home.
Yeah.
Right. So, and then you also developed a mold of wagashi, which I think is a key part, because wagashi is visual, is very important. And if you have a nice mold that you can use, you can make wagashi. And then you can serve at your party and impress your guests. So, so what did you? What is your wagashi mold? It's what kind of?
I was looking into creating wagashi recipes. I discovered other things. The traditional wagashi wood mold are very, very expensive in Japan now. It can be anything between 150 to 400.
Dollars?
US dollar.
Wow.
Yeah, a piece.
Oh, because the craftsmen who make the molds are, you know, craftsmen, artisanal people who make wagashi molds are disappearing, right? So, wow, it's almost like literally artwork.
Yeah, so anyway, it's very expensive. And this is because they are all hand crafted and carefully carved by the wagashi mold masters. One mold at a time. I also learned that there are only a handful of wagashi mold masters left in Japan now, which is very, very sad.
Right.
Yeah. In order for our beautiful tradition to continue, I had to do something. I thought if I make several types of wagashi mold in plastic, it would be more approachable for everyone to try and make wagashi at home. And when they realize how easy it is to make wagashi dessert, then they would look for difficult wagashi to try. Soon, people would also like mold that are more authentic and traditional. This will help the mold masters survive.
Right.
Yeah, if people start recognize and purchasing their artistic wooden mold, the more accessible the wagashi mold masters would thrive also.
Right. Yeah. So if you go to Japan, there are a lot of wagashi shops alongside Western pastry shops. Mm. So I think it's important to have all those molds available and traditional artisans, but because it's such a traditional work conditions, I think, it's hard to find people to succeed their art. So what you're doing is to preserve wagashi culture without enough number of artisans who make mold. So that's amazing. But do you sell your mold here in the U.S. as well? Where can we buy it?
In the future.
Okay.
But yeah, we want to try to sell in here.
Okay, so keep me posted because I want to try. Yeah, because your book, you know, the Wagashi cookbook, it's amazing. Like, oh, wow, I can use, I can make this wagashi so beautiful and the pictures, and I can make it at home, which I never imagined. Yeah, so that's exciting. Okay, so let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about actual wagashi recipes in Machiko's new cookbook, Wagashi Cookbook. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Needs, podcast live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Machiko Chiba, who is a best-selling cookbook author, television personality, and an entrepreneur based in Tokyo and New York. So in your new book, you have 57 recipes of wagashi. So could you give us, our listeners, some examples of wagashi from the book, and they can try easily?
Yeah, I'd like to introduce cherry blossom rice cake.
Mm.
Yeah, we call sakura mochi.
Yeah, such in season.
It's now season, and so it makes 8 pieces of red bean paste, 60 gram red bean powder, 60 gram sugar, 120 gram water, and the rice, 200 gram domyoji rice, and 200 gram water, 1 scatula red food coloring, 30 gram sugar, pinch of salt, and 8 salted cherry blossom leaf, 8 salted cherry blossom flowers. And
the first, flowers.
Yeah, how to make. And they said to make the red bean paste mixed together in red bean powder and 6 grams of sugar and 120 grams water in the cooker. And next, close the lid and heat for 2 minutes with a steam hold set to cold. Mix with the wooden spatula until the paste is combined and set aside in a separate bowl. And rinse the cook then and place the rice inside. Give it quickly, right? Rinse, then drain the rice using a sieve. Put the drained rice back into the cooker, then add 200 gram water of food coloring, 30 gram sugar, and salt, and mix well. Cover in the heat 3 or 7 minutes with the steam hole set to open. After cooking, let it sit for an additional 3 or 4 minutes. Divide the red bean paste into 8 equal portions and roll each in the bowl. Mix the cooked rice with a wooden spatula and divide it into 8 portions. While still warm, take a portion of rice and gently flatten in the palm of your hand. Place one bean paste bowl in the center of the rice and gently fold the rice around it to cover. Repeat with remaining rice and red bean paste. Wrap one salted leaf around each rice cake. Lightly rinse the salted cherry blossom flower, shake dry, and place one on the top of each serving.
Mm, right. So it really looks like a cherry blossom in a chili leaf.
Mm.
Right. So like, yeah, you'll be proud when you serve at the party to see Hanami with the cherry blossom party.
And right. The cherry blossoms, when it's salted to preserve the fragrance and the flavor and the color, it's very lightly pink. It's literally from the trees.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So when you use that in a dessert, it means a lot for us, but also for, you know, my friends who's never seen a cherry blossom or wagashi, they get very excited.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's so pretty.
Right. So it's like a bomb. And even, I think people don't even know how flavorful the leaf can be.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. Yeah, I always look for, even more so, for the smell of a leaf in the sakura mochi.
Uh-huh.
That's my personal preference too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And the sakura, you can buy sakura tea also these days. It's green tea, light green tea with sakura fragrance, which is very nice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I have to look into that.
Mm.
Right. Yeah. So basically, though, this domyuchi powder you mentioned, which is like based on the sweet rice, but I think you can swap with regular rice powder too. So basically, it's easy. You make azuki beans, and then you cook rice and wrap it, basically, and then wrap also with chili leaf. That's the idea. So if people want to try, it's really easy to try.
Yeah. Like this morning when she made the sakura mochi for you.
Yeah, thank you. I can't wait to try that.
We didn't have the domyoji with the rice powder, so we used the sweet mochi rice, which is like it's also called a sticky rice, where it's available in any market, and we coarse grind it in the blender and cooked it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you don't have to necessarily go for these traditional, ingredients.
Right.
We could make use of what's in the market too.
Yeah. I love shortcuts. That's what I'm going to do, I think. Yeah, but it's good to have the basic idea, like in your cookbook. But you can always wing many parts.
You can wing it, yeah.
Right. Okay. One of our listeners asked about yubeshi, which is not in your book, I understand. But could you tell us, because you know a lot about wagashi, maybe you can tell us what the yubeshi is and how you can make yubeshi at home.
Yubeshi is wagashi from Yamagata Prefecture.
And north of Japan.
It is a rice cake that boils.
Right. Well, it makes sense because Akita is famous for great rice production.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And it is, but 500 gram, we use a mochiko.
And it's mochiko is another
sweet rice powder.
Mm.
And 200 gram sugar and 75 cc soy sauce. We use soy sauce. And 225 cc water. A handful chopped walnut.
It's so good.
Right, yeah, it's like a fatty piece in wagashi.
Yeah.
Right.
And first we place the mochiko, sugar and soy sauce in a bowl and mix well by hand until there are no clumps. And add the water slowly while kneading. The dough texture should be smooth and have the firmness.
Firmness?
Of an ear love. We call it mimitabu, ear love.
It's such a Japanese thing to say.
Yeah, this is a very common Japanese expression.
Touch your love and then compare with your with dough.
Yeah, but the dough really have to feel like your earlobe.
Right, well, you never forget once you know it.
Yeah, earlobe is so soft.
But we say that it's a phrase in Japan, no?
Soft.
Yeah, it's soft, but
it's firm and soft. Okay.
And divided the dough into six portions. The six portions, and roll and stretch them into a long stick. And then cut them into 10 pieces. And place the walnut inside each piece. And then place them inside the steamer. The steam for 30 or 40 minutes.
Okay.
It's ready. And let's cool.
Right. So I think there are many versions, and that's the walnuts. And also some people put some yuzu, some citrus.
Sometimes yuzu and sesame.
Right.
Yeah, black sesame.
So just basically sweet rice powder. I think some people can use shiratama. That's another Japanese rice powder. And so if you have water, the powder, like flour, and sugar, and soy, and then
soy sauce,
right,
makes it sweet and salty,
and some umami too, right. So just guaranteed taste because
it's so good,
right? So that's yubeshi. I think some commercial products exist in the market too, yubeshi. Although it's very hard to find. That's why one of the listeners asked, "What is yubeshi and how can you make it at home?" Anyway, so so you've been on the book tour for your Kukzen Wagashi Cookbook. So what kind of reaction do you get from the audience when you are speaking to, you know, people in the States?
Everyone was surprised to see the different type of wagashi, which I made using the Kukzen cook pot. At the Kondoburu, it brought much interest among their chef. Also, I have discovered the children love to make wagashi. I had invention to teach a cooking class of youth, which was a part of the foundation created by Louis Vuitton in Paris. And these small children who are only 5 to 10 years old, and all did very well. It was inspiring to see them working, getting creative, and having fun.
What kind of wagashi did you make with the children?
Ohigashi, and the kingyoku, and the nerikiri.
So it sounds like pretty elaborate, difficult artwork.
Well, it seems difficult.
They are artists.
But it's not, because even a 5-year-old can do it.
Right. That's a great point.
Because everybody thinks wagashi is difficult, but this really proved that a 5-year-old can.
I'm totally motivated.
They motivated.
I understand the French education plays important in cultivating children's five sense. So making wagashi was perfect.
And also they learn healthier sweets too. It's an option. I mean, it's funny that Louis Vuitton hosted a kind of workshop for kids.
And everybody enjoyed the beautiful wagashi with our eyes. And they listen to the sound of different ingredients being plated in bowl and mold. And they loved mixing the ingredient with their one hand. They used their mouth and the nose to smell and to taste the different sweetness of each wagashi that they made themselves. They could not wait to eat. And show it to
me neither.
The parent who came with them.
Yeah, they were covered in sugar.
Yeah. I mean, that's covered so cute.
This was an inspiring moment for me in every way. And therefore, I see the future of wagashi outside of Japan in very positive way.
That's true. Right. Well, it's just a matter of, information that's been provided in outside Japan about wagashi. Not many people know. And I really don't know why, because it's such a great food.
But I think my mother would explain, but it would become... It has a potential of becoming popular because, you know, the matcha green tea is
matcha
now very,
already.
Very popular. In Japan, it accompanies matcha.
Right,
so
natural.
Maybe it's a matter of time.
Right. And I think, you know, Japan is such a gift-oriented country. So wagashi is used for gifts. So that's a huge support for Japanese consumer market. But I think the pure... tastiness of wagashi should be discovered in this
and healthiness,
right?
Lots of fiber.
Yeah, definitely, and it's very satisfying. Right? And so different variations. Like I said earlier, it can be really like tiny, beautiful piece, or it could be comfort food. Right. So yeah, let's just try to work on more, you know, promotion of wagashi to the world. Right.
So matcha is already very popular around the world.
Okay, so, all right, so where can we find your details of your books and updates?
On the website, no?
Yeah. So what's the website address you have?
Website?
Oh, about my website and the newspaper.
Okay, so your website, I think it's a Machiko... -cook.com is that your website?
Yeah,
it's machiko-cook.com and so we can find any information about books and updates. Okay, hopefully you're gonna teach some classes in New York and other cities in the world.
Actually, she has a cooking demonstration at the William Sonoma next Saturday on the 14th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's
please
on
come.
The okay. So it's on the website. So.
Yeah.
Great. Mm-hmm. All right. So thank you for joining us, Machiko and Kiko. So good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. So listeners, so Wagashi Cookbook is really fun and beautiful. So I highly recommend to check it out. And if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at Japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or kikokatema.com. And Japanese is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. And our engineer is David Tetesiore. And we will take a spring break. And the next show will be on May 7th. So thank you for listening. I'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaeli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.